WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into the holiday season. We're having crab cakes for Thanksgiving. We're going to be at Pappas up in Cockeysville on Friday. I'll be giving away the Maryland Lottery scratch-off tickets. I had a $50 winner 2 weeks ago up at Greenmount Station. Also brought to you by our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION, as well as our pals at Goodwill and Goodwill Industries, where my wife and I are rolling our sleeves up on Wednesday. You can be a part of it if you wish. If you want to volunteer and help feed some less fortunate folks next Wednesday, the 23rd, downtown at the Convention Center, toss me a note, ness@baltimorepositive.com. Also, shout out to our friends at Wise Markets for providing those turkeys for the breakfast and lunch and dinner that we're going to be serving next Wednesday down there. It is football season. We've done a lot of politics around here. We've done a lot of law around here. I'm going to take a little bit of a dive into a topic that I skirt about, I joke about, I throw some arrows out, but this guy is one of the big experts in the legal space on all things Dan Snyder. He has been following this from the beginning. We welcome him in. He's a Florida-based attorney. He goes by Wallach Legal out on Twitter. He is Daniel Wallach. I call him Dan from time to time, and we've become friends over the course of all of this through legal issues. And there's always a legal issue in the NFL, right, Dan? I mean, there's always somebody screwing somebody or something that's going on, whether it's Deflategate or on the field, off the field. But nothing more tawdry and awful than the other owners looking the other way on the misdeeds and deeds of Dan Snyder. And I think we all wonder, and the football team's 38 miles away here in Baltimore, when is the end? Is the end near? Adam Schefter says the end's near. I don't know that you agree with that.
Well, I think we were on a kind of an expedited path to Jim Irsay maybe taking the next step and saying we're gonna hold this disciplinary process and force him to sell his team. And then within a matter of days, Dan Snyder has taken control of the timing of the sale. And you haven't heard anything from the National Football League regarding this NFL constitution and bylaws and the trial that they were going to have. Dan Snyder has effectively stunted the momentum of the movement to strip him of his team, because now he's going to take it under advisement with Bank of America. And who knows where this ends up? I mean, Adam Schefter may have, you know, some sources. There's a lot of speculation, but Dan Snyder has not definitively ruled out the prospect of only selling a minority interest in the franchise. He has not made a declarative statement that we're all in, we're selling the whole thing, no looking back. And I wonder whether the silence emanating from the league office over the last couple of weeks was really the end game for Dan Snyder, because now he's bought himself a lot of time and he's taken over control of the timing of whether and to what extent he sells. When, if you remember, right before that Bank of America announcement, all the attention, the spotlight was on Jim Irsay's, you know, just incredible declaration that he made at the NFL owners fall meeting in New York. And there hasn't been any follow-up for that because Snyder has effectively changed the narrative.
Well, when it happened, when that narrative changed, I tweeted, first off, he's a liar. I mean, he is a serially dishonest human being. I don't think there's any, and clearly
allegedly,
he has very, very little
allegedly
conscience. Yeah, okay, fair enough. He has very little conscience about any of this, right? So the notion that that announcement was made, I'm like, who announces their intention to sell the team if they really mean it? Like, I wasn't buying it. I thought it was a smokescreen, and now 2 weeks later, you're telling me, well, of course it was a smokescreen, because 2 weeks later, the team's not sold, and the reporters that work for the league, and Adam Schefter works for the league. I mean, he does. I mean, they all do. I know that as a guy that doesn't have a credential anymore after 26 years, that I wasn't willing to play that game. But Adam Schefter's a league mouthpiece at this point. All the reporters are. But who's the mouthpiece of Snyder? And what is the real pressure on him? Like, what's the remedy for Roger Goodell and these owners to come in and say, you don't have it anymore? Now, Richardson got out. The situation with the Clippers a couple of years ago and Ballmer taking over. But the hostile part of this, that Dan Snyder, everyone always thought, he will be a cornered cage dog. He will be hostile legally. He's been hostile to everybody else. Why hasn't the league, what's the legal reason that they can't come in and just clean him out and sell it and give him the money?
Because they need facts. They need something verifiable, a report, a finding by.
Didn't they have that with Wilkinson, though? Didn't they have that?
Yeah, but they've already punished him for that. They gave him a slap on the wrist, a $10 million fine, and put him in like probation, you know, for a couple of weeks. He's already been punished for all the conduct that has been encompassed by the Beth Wilkinson investigation. So if they go back and say, wait a second, we're going to do a do-over here. That wasn't enough. We're going to now commence disciplinary proceedings under Article 8 of the NFL Constitution, and now we're going to kick you out. Well, he's in effect being punished twice, which is why the Beth Wilkinson, which is why the Mary Jo White investigation is so paramount, because she's looking at the issue, the new issue that was raised at that congressional roundtable earlier this year, in which Tiffany Johnston, I think she was a former employee of the Washington Commanders, came forward with an accusation that Dan Snyder tried to, you know, touched her inappropriately and tried to force her or push her into his limousine. And she's also, Mary Jo White's also taking a look at the $1.6 million settlement from 2009. All of this is against the backdrop of accusations that Snyder and his lawyers have been harassing and intimidating witnesses, because by virtue of having an active role in the Beth Wilkinson investigation, Snyder knew who all the accusing witnesses and all the potential witnesses were, and he sicked his lawyers on them, allegedly, to chill them out of testifying. And I think those three issues, the two allegations of direct sexual misconduct by Snyder, as well as witness intimidation, I mean, for a lawyer, there's nothing, you know, obviously sexual misconduct is bad, horrible, but obstruction of justice, you know, has a very specific meaning to me as a lawyer. And I think an attorney who's a former federal prosecutor like Mary Jo White is going to, you know, going to basically throw the book at him if there's any merit behind these accusations that they showed up at his private investigators showed up unannounced at all hours of the day and night at various witnesses' homes and put pressure on them and intimidated them and basically chilled them out of testifying. So I think the NFL is waiting for that shoe to drop, which could happen at any time between now and whenever. The league has announced that this investigation is going forward. So I think what the NFL is waiting for is something else, something that they could hang their hat on other than what took place under the watch of Beth Wilkinson. They need Mary Jo White to come forward to corroborate these other accusations. Maybe the House Oversight Committee, which is really going to be defunct very soon by virtue of the change in power in the House of Representatives from the Democratic Party to the Republican Party. Carolyn Maloney, the chairwoman of the House Oversight Committee, is on her way out. She lost her reelection bid because she got redistricted. Her report, which is going to encompass 11 hours of deposition testimony of Dan Snyder. Remember when he went on his magical mystery yacht tour throughout the Mediterranean? They finally nailed him in Israel and took his deposition for 11 hours. The House Oversight Committee is going to release its report at some point between now and, you know, the end of the year. So I think for the NFL's, you know, for them to be in the best possible position to have the high ground legally, they need to wait for something new, something that's a finding, something that represents actual facts rather than innuendo, before throwing the book at them. Although I feel that there's enough in the record currently for the NFL to take action, which worries me that the league has protected Dan Snyder before, you know, Nestor. I mean, 2 years ago, the folly of this Wilkinson investigation.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. I mean, oral reports, verbal, what are we in a speech class? I mean, like
cue cards where she gave her report orally, like she's in fourth grade. Don't write it down. Just
why would
give it
she
to
agree to that as a legal person? How can that be ethical?
Well, because the client is the NFL, and they entered into a common interest agreement with the Washington Commanders. They're the clients. They can dictate the scope of the investigation and whether they want to report or not. And by contrast, you remember
that's not a real investigation if there's no report.
No, it's a real investigation, but it got whitewashed. She did a real investigation, but they kneecapped her and said, despite doing a year's worth of investigation and you know, dozens or maybe even hundreds of witnesses, now we don't want you to reduce your findings to writing. We want to bury it. Okay.
And they can't subpoena her for the truth.
Well, because she's her client, it's going to be protected by the attorney client privilege, which is a problem. And remember, the NBA, when they investigated Robert Sarver, they put the law firm's full report on the internet. They said to review the entire report, click here. Adam Silver did that for Robert Sarver, which when you look at how the NFL is slowing it down with Dan Snyder and basically putting it on a very slow pace, the NBA took quick action with Donald Sterling 8 years ago. His racist comment led within 48 hours to a lifetime ban imposed by NBA Commissioner Adam Silver. And he got stripped of his team through a probate court proceeding that the NBA aided and abetted. And this all took place within a couple of months. Same thing with Bruce Levinson and the Atlanta Hawks. He voluntarily sold his interest in the Hawks once, racist comments or racially tinged comments attributable to him were known. Same thing with Jerry Richardson and his alleged misconduct. In every instance, with the exception of Dan Snyder, there was expedited relief. The owner was just gone as quickly as the league wanted. Why is Dan Snyder an exception? And I go back to that ESPN investigative report from Seth Wickersham, Don Van Natta Jr., and Tisha Thompson, that he has a lot of dirt on various league owners and on the NFL commissioner. That's the only possible explanation for why the league is allowing Dan Snyder to take control over this process, unless he has made promises behind closed doors that he is, in fact, selling the entire team, but he hasn't made that statement yet.
Well, Dan Wallach is here. He is Wallach Legal. You can follow him out on Twitter, and he does it out of the state of Florida, all over the country, all over the world, really following this particular case. And for the Wilkinson thing and whatever dirt that was there and the punishment, at that point, in your heart of hearts, do you believe it was about them taking care of each other with the owners, or that they knew he had dirt? I mean, it seemed to me that Jim Irsay's pronouncement, I don't care what his dirt is, we need him out of our club, right? That Goodell doesn't agree with that, and potentially Jerry Jones didn't agree with that at the point. And Jerry Jones and Goodell are probably the guys in the middle of this that Snyder has a dossier on to some point to try to embarrass them in some way. But the notion that they were taking care of each other 2 years ago seems to me to be not what the big guys would want to do, that they would want their house more in order than to allow Daniel Snyder to have you and I talking about this in the middle of the season. I mean, it's a pox on the league. It really is.
Yeah, but it's not. It's easy for Jim Irsay to take this on because there's no dirt on him. He's not in the position that Roger
there's
Goodell,
plenty of dirt on Jim Irsay, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of dirt, but we all know it. Right. Nothing could affect him reputationally in a negative way that we probably don't already know that, you know, he's had his issues. Certainly,
I live in Baltimore, Dan. His name's Irsay. Enough said.
Well, you know, ironically, I don't know if you know this little Baltimore Colts trivia. Okay. I live about 150 yards away from where Carol Rosenblum drowned.
Oh, my. Okay.
Carol Rosenblum, the former owner.
Well, and I remember that there are still conspiracy theorists that believe that wasn't accidental.
Right.
50 years later.
He's in debt with gamblers. He drowned mysteriously in Golden Beach. We're going off the track.
Well, that's how Irsay got here. Right? Literally, everybody here knows that, right? The trading of the franchises.
That's right. And by all measure, Carol Rosenblum's son should have inherited the franchise. And there's this big battle, right, between Georgia Rosenblum and, he left the team to his wife. And the son got, like, pushed out. And maybe the history of the Baltimore Colts would have been vastly different.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. So for the Washington football franchise and where they are, Snyder comes out and says, I'm considering selling. I'm getting a bank. And the heat goes away to some degree, right? Like, what would turn the heat up here for the league other than a new finding? If that's what they're hanging their hat on, is somebody coming forward and saying he raped me or he did. I don't know what else they could come forth with that they wouldn't have enough evidence just with the cheerleaders alone and the way he's conducted himself, to your point, intimidating witnesses.
Right. I think the witness intimidation is already a matter of public record because the league could interview the accusers and – But Mary Jo White is doing that. And Mary Jo White is going to have her own. There are five active, at least five active investigations that I know of, any one of which could be the trigger for the National Football League taking action under its constitution and bylaws to force him out of the league. We have Mary Jo White's investigative report, which is covering a very wide portfolio of issues of sexual misconduct, financial irregularities, you know, regarding allegedly shortchanging visiting teams of their ticket revenues, not returning security deposits to season ticket holders, witness intimidation and tampering. You've got the House Oversight Committee. You have this new lawsuit from D.C. Attorney General Carl Racine. And if that ever goes into discovery with depositions and Roger Goodell and Dan Snyder further being subjected to scrutiny under oath, that could be a triggering event as well. And then you have the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Eastern District of Virginia taking a look at more financial irregularities. The Attorney Generals of both D.C. and Virginia looking at the same issues. We have like basically this is like a Chinese restaurant. Instead of column A, column B, you have column A, column B, column C, D, and E, and any one of which could serve as a triggering event for either the commissioner or any member of the executive committee referring charges against Dan Snyder under Section 8.13 of the NFL Constitution to recommend charges to bring the case. You only need one owner or one commissioner. And Jim Irsay has already essentially laid his cards on the table. He's going to be that owner if he wants to be. But I think to act in a vacuum before there are any new facts might give Dan Snyder the upper hand legally, that he's being unfairly targeted, that the other owners are colluding against him, and that this is an arbitrary and capricious, show trial. So if the league is getting good legal advice from its counsel, you know, Paul Weiss, Rifkin, Wharton, and Garrison, one of the best law firms in the country, as I would advise the National Football League and the owners, this is not the right time. Get all your ducks in a row. As long as you have facts, the law is going to be on your side. And as a private association, as a private organization, your decision making, your internal disciplinary decision making, is going to be impervious to judicial review as long as you follow your own rules, and you have a factual predicate to support your findings. And I think at this point in the process, they may not have enough of a factual predicate unless and until those other reports and other investigations wrap up. Because Beth Wilkinson, that ship has sailed. He's already been punished. In the law, we have a concept known as double jeopardy. He's already been punished for that conduct, covering a 20-year time frame of a toxic workplace environment within the Washington Commanders. The time for the league to have nailed him to the cross was in 2020, and now their best hope for the makeup call, the O.J. Simpson makeup call, is to have these new allegations potentially lead to a finding that he's culpable. Because you can't base it on the old allegations, because that's already been sentenced. You need something new, and I think Mary Jo White will probably be the catalyst for the commencement of new charges, as long as the league is being honest, which never guarantee of that. But if the league is inclined to go forward with the Mary Jo White investigation, if she comes out and concludes that he engaged in these inappropriate actions and assaulted one or two women, and that there was some sexual misconduct and witness intimidation, the league is going to have no choice here.
Can he go to jail?
Statute of limitations on some of these offenses have long since passed. I know that there is a tolling for statutes of limitations on certain sexual offenses, but these were in the public domain. There was a settlement agreement. There was a 2009 incident that occurred on an airplane, I think on the commander's or Dan Snyder's private plane. Something happened there, and Snyder and the accuser entered into a settlement agreement. So the witness...
It wasn't a small agreement. It was $1.6
million. $1.6
million.
He tried to characterize that as, well, it was cheaper to settle than to go to court, as if he just settled to avoid court costs or legal fees or the nuisance value of the lawsuit. $1.6 million speaks for itself. No one who believes that they've been falsely accused is going to settle for anything north of like 50,000 or 100,000. That dollar amount speaks volumes as to maybe something occurred there. And notably that that same accuser who settled with him like, you know, 13 years ago, she's cooperating with Mary Jo White. And Mary Jo White has interviewed her. And that incident could end up being the linchpin of Mary Jo White's recommendation or finding that Dan Snyder engaged in this sexual misconduct. The problem, however, is the league knew about it. The league knew about this years ago. They knew about it in 2020 when they worked with Beth Wilkinson. So could Snyder come up with a defense or a good case in court that he's being targeted and that the league is being arbitrary and capricious by stripping him of his team for conduct that occurred 13 years ago that the league already knew about long ago and that Beth Wilkinson looked at within the purview of her investigation? There's some suggestion to me, at least, that these long ago sexual offenses, even if true, would be time barred in a court case and may not necessarily be an appropriate or at least a legally sustainable basis on which to force him out of the NFL. You know, as long as the league knew about this, if the league knew about it in 2020 and didn't do anything then, why are they now trying to do a makeup call? Like an NHL, you know, NHL hockey makeup call. You miss the first penalty, you call the next one to even things up. So there's a real issue here for me in terms of, I believe the league should move forward and basically expel him. But the more contemporary misconduct, I think, is the lower hanging fruit. And while sexual misconduct and sexual assault is pernicious and something that, you know, I'm glad he's getting his comeuppance in the court of public opinion. But I think this, the witness tampering, the witness intimidation, that's much more recent. And I think that in and of itself is conduct detrimental to the welfare of the National Football League. And under the NFL Constitution and bylaws, a finding that the owner engaged in conduct detrimental to the welfare of the NFL is enough to get him kicked out of the league. So I would focus on the witness tampering and the witness harassment almost as much, even if not more, than alleged sexual incidents which occurred more than a decade ago, for which there is a difference of viewpoint as to what actually occurred.
Billionaire criminal activity. That's what we're discussing here today. Dan Wallach is my guest. He is Wallach Legal. You can find him out on the interweb covering all things legal and sports, so real sports legal expert. But this Dan Snyder thing is certainly caught. It's not every day that you see this. This is not a garden variety, not even Sterling or Richardson or these things where these guys just are like, all right, I've had enough. I'm out. I don't want to be that public. Snyder seems to eat this up to some degree. Still coming to games. My wife's running the team, but she's really not. I mean, the dishonor of all of this, I thought to myself, when he's screwing the other owners out of money and saying concerts and ball games and club level seats and where all the revenue goes, cutting their pie and lying to them, I thought that's where Jerry Jones and Jim Irsay and, you know, all of the owners say, we don't screw each other. You're out. Yeah, that would be the end. You're stealing from us, you're out. And Racine's is on that pathway down in D.C., correct?
His focus is not – well, he has two different, I guess, cases. He has the lawsuit that he brought, which is a unfair consumer practices lawsuit, which seeks to represent the consumers of the District of Columbia and the underlying misconduct are not the financial irregularities, but it's the misrepresentations and omissions by Snyder, the Commanders, the NFL, and Roger Goodell about the Wilkinson investigation and about the role that Snyder and other members of the executive team of the Commanders played in creating this toxic workplace environment. They're trying to transform. I think the Attorney General is trying to take this workplace stuff and transform it into an unfair and deceptive trade practices civil lawsuit tied around the sale of goods to consumers in the district. I mean, you know, the classic case of unfair and deceptive trade practices is when you make false representations about the product that you're selling to the public, right? You know, so if you claim that a particular product has these great benefits and it's all a lie, well, that's an unfair and deceptive trade practice arising out of the sale of consumer goods or services. Racine is trying to make that kind of case here, not based on any misrepresentations about the product that's being sold, but on the but more on corporate malfeasance that occurs untethered to the actual sale of the product. I mean, it just can't be that fostering a toxic workplace environment constitutes an actionable unfair trade practice to the person who buys tickets to a game. And I think that theory is not going to hold up in the long run when it gets to the DC Court of Appeals. But the value of that lawsuit may be simply applying the pressure to the National Football League, putting even more momentum behind the movement to get Dan Snyder to sell the team, and then potentially surviving the lawsuit long enough, overcoming the expected motion to dismiss that the league is going to file, you know, soon enough. If Racine can get by that motion to dismiss, and he probably will, he'll have carte blanche to take discovery and depositions and request investigative documents and put the league and Snyder and the Commanders in a position where they've got to make a tactical decision. Do we want to proceed and expose ourselves in the court of public opinion as well as a court of law?
Well, this is the John Gruden situation, right? Is that when these things happen, many folks think the Gruden situation leads back to Dan Snyder slipping some information out the side door on emails, right?
Yeah, well, that was the implication in the ESPN report, that Snyder was the agent that, you know, fed all this information to the league office.
And it was to get at Bruce Allen, right? It wasn't even to get it at Gruden.
He was jealous of Bruce Allen. You know, the other owners just love Bruce Allen. And Dan Snyder became very jealous of Allen's popularity among other league owners. He was a very celebrated, he was in the club, whereas Dan Snyder was reviled. But Racine caught a break here in this lawsuit. The judge who was assigned to the case, her name is Heidi Passichow. I'm not sure anybody has ever heard of her in your radio media market, but she has a track record of always allowing these types of consumer practice claims to get past a motion to dismiss, because the standard for pleading a civil claim in the District of Columbia, it's very easy. You just have to make a short and plain statement of the alleged facts. And this statute is a remedial statute that's intended for the protection of consumers in the district. And as a result of that remedial purpose, it's construed very broadly. And those two factors play into the attorney general's, you know, favor in terms of arguing against the dismissal of the case. He's probably going to get by the NFL's motion to dismiss. And once that happens, it's fair game when it comes to depositions and discovery. And that's maybe what might very well be what Racine is after here. He may not get victory in the long run, but victory has many, you know, different aspects to it. And for him, getting at the truth and getting the NFL to be more transparent with what happened in the Wilkinson investigation may be his true goal, rather than recovering money for the District of Columbia.
Dan Wallach is here. He is talking all things Dan Snyder. At some point, we'll have happier conversations about it. Well, I'll get to Springsteen in a minute, I promise. Last thing for you is we sort of put a bow on this thing. He's never going to sell the team on his own volition, right? Like, there's just no, he's never going to say, all right, you got me. It's just not, it's not his personality. It's not his nature. I think that to your point, all that great reporting that Dan Van Noten did and Seth Wickersham and all, the ESPN piece and all that. The one thing we definitely know is they're going to have to come and take it from him. And that's why that press release 2 weeks ago of I'm getting a bank to consider. I just thought that was such BS, and apparently you do as well. It's just
kicking
the can.
Track record. Look at his track record. Look at the league's track record. If it was Wellington Mara that made a statement like that, well, I guess I would believe it. But Dan Snyder, has sued everybody under the sun. Has gone after his partners. Has used the courts. Has fought whether or not he's ever cornered. He has unhesitatingly used the court system to fight back against every person who's ever allegedly done him wrong. And I don't see him selling so voluntarily. A normal person would take $7 billion from Jeff Bezos and ride out into the sun. But his identity is bundled up in his ownership of the Washington Commanders. You have to remember that he was a fan of the team and idolized the team. And this is not somebody who had that long of a record of success and acclaim in the business world. People like Jerry Jones, Jerry Richardson, I mean, they were titans of industry and they were successes for a long period of time. Dan Snyder got the team at age 34. He had been engaged. He had a few failed businesses in his early 20s and then he had an entrepreneurial spirit, and on his third or fourth venture, tapped into something that made him a billionaire. And within a couple of years, he went from having this newfound wealth, being a Commanders fan, to now owning the team. So he's not situated as normally as most owners are, that either that have been around the sport for a long time and inherit the teams from their family, or become billionaires and have a prominent reputation in the business world. People like Robert Kraft, Jerry Jones. His identity. And I'm not playing psychologist. I'm reading the tea leaves.
This is all he's got, and apparently he doesn't have any friends either, right?
Yeah. Well, unless you work for him, then I guess you become his friend for hire. So if he gives this up, he's going to be this lonely guy, albeit in a $150 million mansion. He's going to. I think Mike Florio said it best. Would you rather be? I think it's better to be rich than rich and well known. Right? Because with the well-known, you have all this scrutiny. And Dan Snyder, I think, got into something that ended up being much bigger than he ever anticipated it would be. He thought he would be a successful owner, be a hero to his fans. They're winning right now. They're winning. Yet there's been no stunting of the momentum. And I use that word. The public will never change their view around Dan Snyder, even if he wins the Super Bowl. Even as unlikely as that is, I think in the DC area, in that entire district, his reputation and the disregard that he's held in will never change. No amount of winning, no luck in the draft will ever change that. And I think that's the biggest misconception that he has, that winning will cure all ills. Getting a franchise quarterback will remedy it. Getting a new stadium. Would have solved his problems with the owners.
He thought that for sure, right?
Yeah, but how can you fail to get public funding on a new stadium when you have three jurisdictions competing against one another and public funding for stadiums is sort of like a commonplace? Buffalo Bills
got public funding from New York
for almost a full $1 billion when other states weren't even in the bidding process. It was just the mere, sort of the suggestion that the Bills could relocate. Here you had Virginia, you had Maryland, you had the District of Columbia, three jurisdictions that were bona fide contenders to land the Reds, to land the Commanders. I'm sorry, I said the Redskins. And it got so bad. How much of a loser could this guy possibly be that he had bills that were approved by the state senator in Virginia and by the House of Representatives? You had two different chambers of the state legislature approve funding. And then when it went to a conference committee, it fell apart because constituents started to call into these lawmakers and said, if you give any money to Dan Snyder, I'm going to vote you out of office.
You ever met Dan Snyder?
No, have you?
Yes. He did my show. I found a tape of him on my show when I was syndicated back at the turn of the century. It's only like an 8-minute conversation. I have it. I haven't ever really listened to it, but I have identified I have it. So I didn't. I mean, I've had so many. I've been doing this 31 years. When I was syndicated, I've had all sorts of people on the show. Sometimes I forget that I've had them on until somebody shows me a picture. About 10 years ago, it was before my wife was sick. So it was 10 years ago. Marvin Lewis and I are very close, and I go to the NFL owners meetings. I've been going for 18 years now, right? So I've been to the Biltmore and the thing they do in Orlando and the thing they do in Boca and the thing that they do with the Breakers. I'm at that event every year. It's about 10 years ago, and Marvin and I are drinking buddies, and Mike Pereira was with us at the time. He was the head of officials. I know Mike and his wife well. And there were six of us, and we were just having cocktails at the bar. Trying to think if this was, I think it was at the Breakers, but I could be wrong about that. I'm pretty sure. he came into the circle with his wife, and Marvin knows him. Marvin worked for him, right, as a defensive coordinator for 5 minutes 20 years ago, before he got the Cincinnati job when he left Baltimore. And Marvin knew him, and he welcomed him in, and he introduced Snyder to me. And he said, oh, this is my friend Nestor. He does sports media up in Baltimore. He owns a radio station. And Snyder says to me, matter of fact, he's wearing his little cardigan sweater. He's like, oh, you have a radio station. I have five. You want to buy one? It's the first thing he said to me. This is when he had his red zebra mistake, you know, with the radio stations and all that. So he sat on the couch and talked for 10, 15 minutes. I don't really remember much about it, you know, other than the obvious arrogance. You know, he's not a normal guy. You know what I mean? He doesn't come into a conversation, hey, how are you? What's going on? Nice to meet you. He's not, he's a prick. I mean, there's no doubt about that, but 15, 20 minutes of that. But I did find myself, the only thing he said to me is, you want to buy one? You want to buy one of my stations? And I'm thinking to myself, your employees must love you, dude. You know, hi, nice to meet you too. How about that? You know, Dan Wallach is here. He is Wallach Legal. I want to get the
icebreaker that is. What an icebreaker.
Yeah, it created a great relationship between me and Dan. Had I remembered having him on the show, I probably said, hey, you did my show. But I didn't remember it. At some point, I'll listen to it. Springsteen, that's your thing, my thing, whatever. So the Ravens have thrown me out of being a media member, and I have flights to New Orleans, Tampa. I have a flight next week to Jacksonville that they're not going to let me take, right? So I have all of these points that I brought back in, and the Springsteen tour is happening, right? So I have just been – I'm going to the Super Bowl in Phoenix, at least I think I am, if the league credentials me, as I've done for 28 years. That would be another lawsuit. But so I'm going to Phoenix, and the tour starts like a couple of days before radio, the radio week. So I have a flight to Atlanta for the second show of the tour. I have flights to Houston on the way back. I have, let's see, Kansas City, Oklahoma City, Austin, like all of that's happening.
Are you ticketed to the shows for those?
You know, tickets are click. I mean, the tickets are really expensive on the East Coast. So if you want, I have a ticket in State advice? College.
Can I give you some advice?
Sure.
Always target soft markets for
right. That's what I'm doing. All the red states are soft markets. Houston tickets are $50 right now.
Right. Red states, but also I think Atlanta. Aside from the fact that it's a red state, it just for me historically has always been, you know, one of the great value buys on the Springsteen tour over many, many years. So I've always viewed Atlanta as a great city to see Springsteen, because if you're going to go to the, you know, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, forget it. The price, as well as the competition to get into the pit. You know, if he does this general admission seating or general admission area, it becomes a, you know, waiting game. You get a number and people line up all hours.
I'm
of the
sort
day.
Of lucky, Dan. I've had my hand on Bruce's ass about 15 times, carrying him through the pit during Hungry Heart. So I've done that all over the world. I have videos of all of it.
I strummed his guitar during Born to Run. And
nice.
He bled
he let
on
you
me.
Do it? Yeah, nice. Where'd you
he
do that?
He bled on me in Wrigley Field in 2012. He slept. Okay. I had the good fortune of winning the lottery. He played two nights in Wrigley Field in August or September 2012. And I drew the first, I was one of the first 50 people both nights allowed to go into the field. And I was on the front, I was on the stage, hands on stage. And on the first or second, I think it was the first night, it rained horribly. And he slashed his fingers playing the guitar's hand. And the combination of the rain and the blood, it basically kind of like was all over his guitar. And those of us who got near him got a little bit of Springsteen blood on there, you know, around them. If you touched his guitar or touched his hand, I did wash my hands for any of you in the listening audience who wonder about that. But you got to target the soft markets, because the show is going to be the same whether you go to New. I mean, it's not going to be identical.
It's going to be great no matter where it is.
He doesn't shortchange the fans. He doesn't give you a lesser show in a soft market. Detroit is a very soft market historically. I think it could be, you know, it could be tied to the sort of the economic conditions in Detroit. They're not willing to spend as much money as, let's say, the crazy New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania fans. But another piece of advice, you're front loading the tour. The tour, every tour that he's ever done, and even the Broadway show that he did a couple of years ago, gets better the later it gets in the tour. He hits his stride halfway to three quarters of the way through the tour. Once he figures out what works, what doesn't. He gets more confident. The best shows are always towards the back end of the tour. So don't overlook those, because the show you see at the end of the tour is going to be better than the show you see the first night.
Well, I know all of this because I've been traveling around with Bruce forever, and Nils Lofgren and I have been friends for, oh my God,
oh, 30, Maryland. Yes.
35 years. So Nils has always helped me out to get the pit tickets, but it's still not cheap. You pay the ticket, and then I make a donation to Nils's charity out in Scottsdale. It's dogs and cats and homeless people. So it's a great thing for me that I write these checks and over the course of time, but I haven't talked to Nils, and I'm going to try to get him on before the tour. He always says yes. It's just a matter of timing to hit him at the right time. But I am looking right now, Dan. Tickets are $14 in Tulsa right now. $14 to see Springsteen. And they are $738 to see them down where you are in Hollywood, Florida. So I'm into the soft markets. I'm also into seeing different places. If you've never been to Tulsa, the arena there, because it was built with oil money, it's among the nicest arenas I've ever been to in the world. I saw Rush open a tour there about 6-7 years ago as well. Dan Wallach is here. We love Springsteen. Last thing for you.
What do you think of the new record?
That's what I was going to ask you. First off, Jimmy Fallon's terrible. He's a terrible interviewer. It's just that it's not any good. I can't get through it. I can't get through all that awkward with him with Springsteen. But the performances themselves, and Paul Stanley did this a couple years ago from Kiss, where he fronted a review act. I've watched a little bit, and I don't need Bruce in E Street. I like Bruce at a piano. I like Bruce with the jug band he did 15 years ago. Like, Bruce is good at... But this feels a little karaoke to me in the beginning. Just a little bit for me. Him standing out in front in a suit as a 75-year-old man.
He looks great.
He sounds okay in the beginning. And you're always like, well, the tour gets stronger. I love Bruce. I can't guarantee, after having seen Pearl Jam this year where half the band had COVID, I've seen John Mayer this year where the whole band had COVID and he had to kind of come out and just strum the guitar, that I'm going to go early in the tour just to make sure I get there, you know, because I don't want to tempt my fate or Bruce's fate that we're guaranteed, because he's playing Baltimore, right? And Dan, we built a new arena here on top of the old arena. Our arena was built in 1961. Bruce doesn't get here until April the 7th. So I'm not wishing any weirdness on other, but I'm hoping April 7th happens, and I do have tickets for the Baltimore show, but I'm going to go to a couple of the early shows and be a part of it. And I'm interested to see how much of this material is going to bake into E Street, because some of this stuff is stuff he would see a sign and say, Steve, let's play that, you know, Roy, figure it out, let's go. And Nils being my friend, and he said this on the air many times, and you can go watch any of my sit downs with Nils. I said, it's the toughest band in the world to be in, because Bruce audibles, Bruce gives you homework. There have been many nights where Nils has left me a backstage pass and he'll text me and say, Bruce gave me homework tonight. And one of the nights I was in Brisbane, Australia. And this was back before he was doing the albums. I was with Nils. I was with Tom Morello, and I was with Jake Clemens. So this was after Clarence died and Jake was in the band. And they all said to me in the green room, and Nils didn't come in. Nils like, we got homework tonight. I'm not going to see you tonight. Fine. You know, and I usually don't even go to the green room before, because I'm usually drinking beer in the car because it's more fun and cheaper and just better. And I don't need to hang out with Roy Bittan again. You know, I'm good, but I like Roy and it's good, but I go to enough shows. And they told me, dude, tonight's going to be crazy. Like, we're doing stuff tonight we've never done. And Eddie Vedder was there. And they wound up doing The Wild and the Innocent straight through. And they had never really done it. And at that point, and the crowd didn't know it. And I went into the bathroom in Brisbane, Australia, and everybody's bitching. Because they didn't know any of the songs. Because and in Canada, they only want to hear Born to Run. Or not Born to Run, Born in the USA. So in Canada, Bruce audibles into... you know, Darlington County or whatever, you know.
There was a period during the 2008-2009 tour where they just played albums from beginning to end. You know, they did The Wild, Innocent, East Street Shuffle. I think the most legendary show on that tour was when you did The River, beginning to end at Madison Square Garden, one of the final nights of the tour. But I'm really thrilled to see this record, Nestor, because he got me into soul music a long time ago. I was, you know, in my mid-20s, and I went to see Bruce and the band on the Tunnel of Love tour. And, you know, he's playing stuff like Sweet Soul Music, Have Love Will Travel. He had a love and a passion for some of the great soul songs, and he played them as covers, and he turned me on to that genre. And I think this is like 30 years in the making, Nestor. It was inevitable that he would make a soul record. And I love the fact that he picked not necessarily the obvious ones. He did a Jerry Butler song. He did some of the, you know, sort of Northern soul records, Northern soul songs from Great Britain. You know, like, I think it was like, I Love You, Indeed I Do. So there are some well-known songs, as well as some B songs that maybe a lot of people haven't heard of. So I hope he plays a lot of them on the tour, but I think the band you're going to see is going to be a hybrid. It's going to be the E Street Band, along with some of the horns from the Tonight Show, and some of the backup singers. So there are some familiar faces that were in that Tonight Show band. They're going to be imported into the E Street Band, and it's going to be like a Tunnel of Love where you have a horn section.
Well, that's going to be great. I'm looking forward to it. I found the date, by the way. It was right before my wife got cancer. We were over in Brisbane. It was February 26th, 2014. You can look it up. And here's the wild part. I remember Morello. I have a picture of Morello and I and Jake and I. And we were up against the stage there. Because in Brisbane, everybody's friendly. It's a little arena. It was a little like Patriot Center arena. And everybody's – we were 5 feet away. And they opened the show, and they were doing this every night in New Zealand and in Australia with a local song.
That's right.
Why the band was like, we had homework tonight, and we came out, and they opened with the Bee Gees Staying Alive that night. And you know, I talked to Nils after, and he's like, we have to learn songs every night, man. But The Wild and the Innocent was the album. And when you think of the songs, E Street Shuffle, 4th of July is probably my favorite Springsteen song, or amongst them, Kitty's Back is also one of my favorites. But Wild Billy's Circus Story, Incident, which I love Incident, you love Incident, but the crowd, Rosalita, they knew, New York Serenade, which he opened with on those stadium tours. They just didn't know the music. So it was such a unique experience. And that's the beauty of Bruce, is that you never know what you're going to get. You know, one night I'm going to go and he's going to play Valentine's Day for me. I swear.
Ooh, I love that record. I love the everything from Tunnel of Love. That's one
the
of
best album ever made.
One of the most underrated records. Listen, enjoy it while you can. I always tell people, whether or not you're a Springsteen fan or not, he's a legend. So for the same reasons you would want to see Paul McCartney, Barry Manilow, even, you want to see these people at least one time. And if you've never seen Bruce Springsteen, now's your chance. I mean, he's 73 years old. He looks dynamite. I think he's going to be doing this into his 80s, health willing. But you never pass up an opportunity to see a legend at the top of his game. If you like rock music, if you like soul music, still to this day, the best performer, best live performer out there. Because as he pointed out in this great Howard Stern interview, artists like him played live, played clubs, played small clubs. They learned their craft on how to be great stage performers by playing these rock and roll clubs and these venues at places where you and I went to college. That same environment doesn't exist anymore. And someone like Bruce Springsteen wouldn't be Bruce Springsteen today without that kind of training. Have you ever seen the No Nukes show at Madison Square Garden?
Amazing.
I would encourage anybody to watch his performance in Gary U.S. Bonds' Quarter to Three. That's one of the most theatrical live performances that I've ever seen any artist.
Well, in the 70s, he was much more a review, R-E-V-U-E, review act, right? Like, he saw himself, and their get-ups in the 70s, if you see Clarence and the Whites, it was not burlesque, but certainly a stage show. It was a stage show, not a concert, right? Like, in that way, and I think... I mean, really, if you go back even to The River, some of the songs on the second side of that, and Drive All Night, you know, some of these beautiful songs are really born in the 50s. They're born of doo-wop and born of his childhood, literally, right?
He's throwing away more good songs. That would be any other artist's best song ever. Can you imagine? He shelved Save My Love for right. So many years. That's one of his best songs ever. And nobody talks about songs like Stolen Car, even. I mean, we could go on for
point
hours
blank.
And hours
we can go all
hours.
Night. Absolutely. Dan, we will. When Springsteen comes, hopefully Dan Snyder will be out the pasture and The Commanders will have a new owner. I really doubt that.
It's not going to happen by then. It's not going to happen by then, because if it goes to a sale, there has to be a due diligence, and the ownership has to, you know, interview. It's going to take many months for that process to unwind. And if it goes into an involuntary process where they force him to sell over his objection, it could be, you know, a couple of years worth of litigation. It could be tied up in court. The question ultimately comes down is does Dan Snyder want to sell voluntarily? Because if he doesn't want to sell voluntarily, it's going to be a real shit show for a couple of years, because I got to tell you, this NFL constitution is very vaguely written. It's vaguely written for a reason, but I think Snyder will be able to exploit some of the vulnerabilities in that document, because we haven't even talked to him. And maybe it's a topic for another show, but Snyder's going to have a lot of good arguments if the league tries to strip him of his interest based upon age-old or decade-old sexual incidents. So it remains to be seen. The league has to get him to voluntarily sell. Otherwise, it's going to get ugly.
Well, and he's got dirt as well. Dan, take care of yourself. I'll see you in a couple of months, maybe at the Super Bowl, maybe at a Springsteen show. Now that I know that you're traveling, you know, I mean, meet me in Houston, you know, meet me in the city tonight is what I would say. All right.
Meet you in Baltimore. And I'm being legit about that. Baltimore is the ideally timed show for me. So let's talk off camera. I will make my first ever appearance in Baltimore, because it's going to line up with my availability. So many of the other shows are going to be tough for me to get to.
Yeah, you
Baltimore.
Better bring $500, wallet, because it ain't going to be cheap getting into the CFG Bank Arena.
Well, I think I know somebody who knows Nils Lofgren. So
we're going to play that angle, are we? All right. Well, we'll see what goes on. Dan Wallach can be followed at Wallach Legal. I hope you do. And take care of yourself and your family. We'll see you soon, okay?
Thank you very much, Nestor. It's a pleasure as always.
Always. Dan Wallach joining us here. Wallach Legal. Find him. You can find me out at Pappas on Friday. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Goodwill and Window Nation. Reminder again, we're going to be serving some less fortunate folks who need a Thanksgiving dinner. We're all talking about what kind of pie we're going to have and what our stuffing and our gravy and all that. On Wednesday, my wife and I are going to roll our sleeves up with our friends at Goodwill in conjunction with our friends at Wise Markets, providing those turkeys down at the convention center. If you want to participate, ness@baltimorepositive.com finds me. And if you want to participate at Pappas with a great crab cake on Friday for the holidays, come on by and say hello. Mike Bordick will be with us. World Series champion. I've never met Adam Kolarik. We're going to do that from Catonsville. He'll be out with us with his dad, Frank. We'll be talking about not Field of Dreams, League of Dreams, as well as David Steele, who's written a great book on race and culture and sports, and Dan Rodericks, who is putting together a beautiful one-man show 2 weeks from now downtown. So I'm going to talk to him about that and politics and the new government in Maryland and all that good stuff. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.